Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 130. My name is Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And welcome. I felt like there was more to that sentence.
Yeah.
And it just never happened. But 130, I feel like that's a nice number.
Right? It's pretty.
Yeah.
That's pretty substantial.
Cool. We're still going, you guys.
Yeah.
It's exciting. Let's see. What's going on? It is the beginning of February, which is surprising. There is a lot of snow on the ground.
Good amount.
We had some pretty substantial ice not too long ago.
And it sounds like we're getting more snow this week.
Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I think. Yeah, we're supposed to get, like, a nice little...
That sucks.
Yeah, it's not my favorite thing.
Yeah. But the Super Bowl is tonight.
It is.
And I'm very conflicted on who to root for.
I do not care.
Yeah. I hope Kendrick's performance is going to be good. Because I really think he's a really talented artist and a super intelligent person.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very curious to see what he does with all of that.
Yeah. I can't really be bothered to pick a team this time. Like,
yeah.
Because I'm not a huge Eagles fan. I find... Personally, and this is me, I'm so sorry if any of you are Eagles fans, I find their fans obnoxious.
I mean, Philly.
I know. But
don't
like,
need to say anything else.
But like, yeah. There's been a lot of like smack talk, and it just, I'm over it, and I'm so just done.
Yeah.
And so I don't really love Philly, because I'm not a huge fan of the fans, and then there's Kansas City, and I'm just tired.
Yeah.
I'm tired of hearing about them. I want them to disappear into a nice little hole, like just never to be heard from again, because it's just not, it's just like Tom Brady winning, you know, 5 Super Bowls in 7 years or something. Like, it stops being fun to watch them play. I know Mahomes is great. I know Kelce is fantastic. I know, you know, they've got all these skilled players. Like, I get that. But, like, I just don't care.
Yeah. I'm pretty anti-Eagles for very personal reasons. I like to cheer against certain family members of mine. I really don't want to cheer for the Eagles. And the Chiefs are, as a whole, a lot more pro-Trump than the Eagles are.
Than we like to see, yes.
Yeah. And, you know, Mahomes is a whole thing.
Yeah.
Travis Kelce, I feel like, is playing the neutral ground, which I don't love, but whatever. I love Taylor Swift.
Right.
And she's rooting for the Chiefs. So I'm also very conflicted.
Yeah.
I don't know. We'll see how it goes. Maybe I'll make like a mid-game decision. I'll be neutral until, you know, about halfway through, and then I'll be like, I don't know, the refs are missing a lot of penalties for the Chiefs. I'm just going to start rooting for the Eagles.
Right.
Oh, God, I don't even know if I can do that.
I know. It's really hard. Honest to God, if either one of these teams was different, if it was the Bills, if it was, you know, San Fran, like, if either side of this game was a different team, mm-hmm. I would be so much more interested.
Yeah.
But for some reason, just watching these two teams play again after just seeing them play...
I really wanted the Bills.
It just feels so pointless.
Yeah.
So...
In wildly different news, Kristen and I are both currently reading Onyx Storm.
Of course we are.
And it's intense.
And stuff's gone down.
Yeah. We're about a little over a third of the way through it.
Yeah. Nearing halfway for me. Like, just...
Yeah.
I'm almost at halfway.
It's
pretty close.
So, that's a thing. No spoilers.
I am so impressed that I have not come across a spoiler yet.
Yeah.
Granted, if I see anybody say, like, Onyx Storm, I just fly past it on social media. I'm like, nope, I don't want to know. I don't want to know if you're sad. I don't want to know if you're happy. I don't want to know where you are in the book. I don't want to know. I don't want to know anything. And, like, it's only been... What, 2 weeks since it came out? But, like, I still feel like I'm behind, because mm-hmm. usually I can finish it in a couple of days, but just with everything going on in general, my poor mental capacity has not been there to read a story that I love. I'm like, just wait, just a little longer. But I dove back in last night, and read a couple of chapters, and now I'm more invested again, so mm-hmm. I'll be back in it.
Yeah. And you know what? This reading this book, listening to audiobook, which is very good, is really making me want to go back to Fourth Wing, because, man, that book was so good.
Mm-hmm.
So...
Yeah. Trust me, yeah. I've been feeling the itch. Like, a lot of people did their rereads before Onyx Storm,
mm-hmm.
and I wish I had had the forethought to start it at the beginning of December and read through both of them, because I've only read Iron Flame once. Like, I don't think I read it a second time. So I would like to go through and read both of them again, and I love the Fourth Wing audiobook. I know I'm a little on the controversial side of that, because a lot of people don't love the Fourth Wing audiobook.
Oh, really?
Something about the narrator, and, like, she had a cold at the beginning of it, so she's got, like, a sniffly... I didn't notice either. I thoroughly love that audiobook. Yeah. So, I know that bothered some people. I also have the graphic audio, and I can't bring myself to listen to it.
What's that?
It's... Okay, so graphic audiobooks are... It's an audiobook with a full cast.
Okay.
And, or usually a full cast. And, like, they do, like, sound effects and stuff.
Oh, okay.
So, like, it's not a movie, but it's, like, they perform
the it's thing. A lot more immersive, I would imagine.
Yeah. And I've never actually listened to any graphic audio. But I bought the Fourth Wing one because I had credits. And so I was like, why not? And I think it's in two parts.
Oh.
So you have to, like, buy both parts. And it was a while back again. I had free credits, so I was like, sure, why not? And so I have it, I just haven't brought myself to listen to it. So I'm like, okay, I may listen after Onyx Storm, I may go back and start from scratch and listen to Fourth Wing, listen to Iron Flame, listen to Onyx Storm, and then if I'm not completely tired of it, maybe I'll go back and listen to the graphic.
Yeah, if you do listen to that, let me know how it is, because I just recently jumped on the bandwagon of duets, right?
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so I read like listened to one or two books that were in that format, and it was like weird at first because you're so used to reading like the dual narration where they're like separate.
The guy does the girl voices, the girl does the guy voices on their chapters. Yeah. It's just how, yeah.
And then, you know, this one, when you have duets, like the guy will jump in when it's him talking. And at first I was like, ooh, I don't know. But then I was like, no, actually, like, it's very nice, especially when you really like the male narrator's voice.
Right.
To be able to get more of him.
It's kind of cool. Yeah.
I think it would be really cool to hear that in, like, Fourth Wing, where you could have, like, a whole bunch of different people playing different voices.
So. Especially, I mean, I would love it in the regular audiobook, because I love Teddy Hamilton's voice. And I would love to hear Zayden's lines come out of his mouth, but it's okay, whatever, it's fine.
Yeah. It's also so hard to, like, reread and re-listen to things when there are so many new books coming out all the time.
There really are. It's nuts. There's so many good things to read, and it's... You just can't.
You guys should see my spreadsheet of books of upcoming releases, series I've started, my current reading log, but I'm not going to show you because it would give away too much about me and my preferences. Yes, so if you would like to talk to us about the Super Bowl, about Onyx Storm, without any spoilers, please, or Fourth Wing in general, or your spreadsheets full of reading stuff, you can contact us at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Instagram or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. I feel like I should also say you can email us about Percy Jackson too, because that's sort of the point.
Any of the things.
Yeah. All of the things. We haven't gotten an email in a little while. I've been checking. So hopefully somebody will shoot us something interesting to talk about soon. But until then, we do actually have a nice little chunk of news and updates to talk about. Nothing, you know, staggering or shocking, but some things that I thought would make for some interesting discussion. First and foremost, we did forget about this. January 5th was Walker's birthday. He's 16 now.
Wow.
So that's a lot to me. That's just really surprising.
I mean, yeah.
But good for him. filming for season 2 wrapped on February 1st, which is very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
Less exciting is the fact that season one wrapped around the same time in 2023, and the show premiered in mid-December of that year. So we could be waiting until December for this to air. My only thing about that is that maybe they have a little less to do on the back end, because so many things could already be, like, developed and, like, in the computer, like, when they're doing effects and stuff like that, that could already be handled. But then again, Sea of Monsters, maybe more CGI this year, we don't really know.
Right, I was gonna say, like, the Camp Half-Blood sets and stuff like that have already been, like, they're not messing around with special effects for that as much. Mm-hmm. Like, anything they are using digital for, they already have settled. So, like, yeah, that would make some sense. But you're right, half to three quarters of this book takes place, like, not at Camp Half-Blood, and it's, you know, wide open, just like any of the other ones. So, yeah. Yeah. The other thing is, since they weren't busy building some of the groundwork while they were shooting, maybe they're a little further ahead on special effects than they were when they did first season, because they may have been able to work ahead a little bit to have more of those creatures and things ready, you know, to have more of that done so that it won't be as hard to pull it all together. So, basically what we're saying is, don't be surprised if it's next December, but we can all hope for August or September, you know, we can all hope for earlier.
That would be cool, but I'm just trying not to think about it too much, and then when it comes, hopefully we'll find out, like, within the next couple of months, maybe we'll get an actual release date. That would be pretty cool.
Yeah, it'd be nice, that, and maybe a trailer.
Yeah.
I mean, that'd be
or
cool.
Or at least another little teaser or something.
Right,
yeah.
Something.
Give us some shots to look at and talk about. Speaking of season two, though, Walker gave everybody a little update. It's via TV Insider when he was backstage at the SCAD TV Fest for 2025, where he received the Rising Star Award, which is very cool.
He definitely is.
Yes, 100%. And he says of season two, it starts off in a little bit of a different place, at least for Percy, than the book, just because of how much bigger I've gotten. And I would say he's a little bit happier than he is in the book. I feel like he's definitely changed a little bit since we last saw him. So I just thought that was interesting. I'm not worried about it because the show has already proven that even when they make changes from the book, they feel very much in line with what the book is trying to convey. So even if he's in a slightly different place, you know, that doesn't bother me at all. And if he is in a slightly different place, maybe that's a little bit more content for a little bit longer episodes or a longer season or, you know, something like that. So, not mad about it.
Yeah.
He also goes on to say, this season has a lot more action than last season for sure. I feel like last season was very much like we would stay in one place and have conversation and then there'd be an action sequence. You know what I mean? It was awesome. But this season, the stakes are higher for our characters, so it almost feels like there's never a place where we just stop and talk. We're almost always doing something, which I think fits this book perfectly. There's just so much at stake for our characters.
Mm-hmm.
I think that makes sense because they pretty much kick off on their quest like right in the beginning, and then because it's kind of an unsanctioned thing and they get on the ship, like they are kind of constantly moving forward.
Yeah.
Now that they've, you know, laid the groundwork for the world, you can start adding more complications, and we already know that. I know they added more Hermes into season one. I can't remember if they said they added more Hermes into season two or not.
I think I saw something where Lynn was talking about how that Hermes had a decent-sized presence at the beginning of season two. My guess is that he maybe has one or two scenes after that, but, like, I think all of his stuff was kind of early in the season heavy, which makes sense with kind of what Sea of Monsters does with the story and all that.
Because that's, like, basically who you see right at the beginning when he meets him on the beach.
Yeah. Right. So, yeah. So, I think there might be a little more of Hermes, but I think it'll be kind of front-heavy. Mm-hmm. And we may get a touch back at the end of the season or something to make sure we keep that storyline going. But yeah, I think the majority of it's going to be early. Mm-hmm.
But it's really good to hear that this is a very action-packed season, because I do think that this book is very action-heavy, and with a lot of introduction to, like, the monsters and stuff, there probably just is a lot going on. So very excited to see how that turns out.
Yeah.
Continuing on, Percy and Annabeth, they have a little bit of an argument at the beginning that kind of lingers, Scobal confirms. It gets resolved at the end, but I think we're playing into the fact that we've all grown and our characters have spent a lot of time apart. So it's like we all have these new dynamics. Our relationships with each other are very different.
I mean, that's one of the funniest things about reading these books. Like, I've read them, I love them, all I think of are Percy and Annabeth are so cute.
Yeah.
Then you think back and you're like, that first series, they spend a lot of it angry at each other, mad in a fight, in a tiff. I mean,
they really don't get together until book five.
No. Like, until then, they're friends, they definitely have, like, they can feel that there's something going on there, but, like, for the most part, they're kind of fighting for three or four books.
Yeah. I think book three is the first time Percy realizes he's, like, kind of jealous or, like, kind of, like, something else is going on. And then book four, like, Rachel comes in and things get complicated. And then book five, finally, they get their stuff together.
Right. So, yeah, there's just so much going on. It does not surprise me that they have a bit of a lingering argument over the season, because that's exactly...
But I also think, just like with the books, that keeps things interesting, and I really do love relationships that build, like, such a strong foundation, and I think that's why these two characters together are so good, because it did take a long time for them to get together, and they had to go through a lot of trials and tribulations to get to that point. So, you know, by the end of season one, these three characters are actually friends. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess Percy and Grover were already friends, but especially Annabeth and Percy are friends. They hug, they walk off into the sunset, and then they spend a whole year apart until the next summer. And then when they come back together, they've probably grown up, you know, had their own experiences with different things, and then new things come about, and then they're going to be having trouble again, so...
And then there's all those pesky Greek gods getting into trouble. Yeah.
So I like the idea that there are new dynamics to keep it fresh and interesting and, you know, still progressing toward what we know is endgame.
Mm-hmm.
This next quote might be my favorite one. On Tyson, who's played by Daniel Deemer. Oh my god, Daniel is perfect, raves diehard Percy Jackson fan Scobell. I was so excited the first day we did our audition together. He walked in and he had this necklace with a trident on it that he's had for years before this. He was also a big Percy Jackson fan when he was younger. So yeah, I can't imagine anyone else as Tyson. He just completely owned it. That makes me so excited because Tyson has a lot of heart, and Tyson teaches Percy a lot of things because of his heart, and I think that their dynamic is really, really important to, especially the first series, but overall, you know, Percy's trajectory. And just the fact that the writer for this article says, raves diehard Percy Jackson fan Scobell.
I mean, it's true.
Yeah, it is true.
It's so true. And I mean, Tyson teaches Annabeth a lot of stuff, too. Like, he's such an important, central character to so much of the growth that Percy and Annabeth go through in the next two books or so. So it's like, yeah, I'm glad they found someone who really puts, you know, really knows Tyson and knows the character and knows what to kind of work on and bring forth. So, yeah, definitely excited to see Daniel Deemer.
Yeah, 100%. The last bit that I got from this article was twofold. Walker confirmed that the storyline in season two required much more practical filming locations, which I feel like is a little bit of a throwback to, like, what we were talking about with filming ending and when the show could be coming out.
Yeah.
Because I do find it very interesting that, you know, they had more practical filming locations. Maybe they had to travel more. You know, that could tie into a lot of different stuff. But I love that, especially when you think of Sea of Monsters and, like, the island and, like, all that kind of stuff. That could end up bringing us some really beautiful, like, landscapes and stuff like that.
Hearing this, I'm curious to see if they use the volume stage for, like, the on-ship stuff.
Yeah.
Or if they end up kind of, like, using live shots of the ocean or whatever. Like, I'm curious how they're going to kind of piece that together.
Yeah. I would say the volume would probably be perfect for the ship.
Right?
Scenes.
Like, that would make sense. Yeah. Because you can literally surround them with the visual and then have the ship in the middle. Like, yeah. It seems like that would be a perfect, you know, use for that sort of thing. But, yeah, definitely... It'll be fun. It'll be fun to kind of see what they do and how they handle season two.
Yeah, and the cinematography in season one was beautiful already. So if they're going to more locations outside of, like, the norm, I feel like that could end up being really awesome. Mm-hmm. The other little tidbit that I really liked from this article was that Walker said the behind-the-scenes crew has been key in feeding his interest in directing one day.
Mm.
So I think that's really awesome. I love when actors become interested in the actual, like, craft of directing and, you know, filmography and all that kind of stuff.
Also loving the reference to the behind the scenes crew, because we do love getting a look at how things are made, and so it's fun to know that the first one went over well enough that they're interested in giving us something more. So
okay, and the last thing I wanted to mention from the news section was that Rick did another round of Goodreads Q&As. I did skim through, like, the first page, because it's been a while since we've talked about this, so I'm sure there are other questions that I, you know, didn't see that might have information, but this one question really popped out to me, because somebody asked him what he was looking forward to in season two, and he says, "One thing I really appreciate about season two is Clarice LaRue being more of a major character, just as she is in the Sea of Monsters book. Dior Goodjohn has definitely brought her A-game to this season. I can't wait for viewers to see her incredible work." And that's got me really excited, because we've talked at length about how interesting of a character Clarice is, and at this point in time, they're still enemies. Like, they're not even frenemies right now. They're still enemies.
Yeah.
And so getting to see her front and center and how she plays a part in the whole season is going to be really cool. And I'm really... She was so intense. Like, she really brought Clarice's attitude to the screen, even if she didn't necessarily bring her body type to the screen like we had wanted to see.
Yeah.
She really did embody who Clarice is, you know, personality-wise, so super excited to see more of her.
Every drop of her fierceness, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, and that takes us to our chapter discussions. So we are talking, of course, about Chalice of the Gods chapter 30 and 31. We're getting so close. But let's start here with Chalice of the Gods chapter 30, entitled I Infiltrate the Lair of Lightning God 3000. Okay, so when we left Percy, he was taking the elevator up to Mount Olympus to deliver the chalice that he now has, because, of course, he can't just mail it. He has to deliver it, which is just unfair. Percy makes it out of the elevator and is headed toward Mount Olympus, but he's not running to the throne room like he usually does. He has to actually go to Zeus's palace, so it's a little bit of a longer run, and it's deceptively long, and he's feeling the burn.
Yes.
Which I appreciate, because I would assume that when you have palaces for gods, it's going to be, like, spread out. I mean, it might be Olympus, but it's still, like, that's going to be one heck of a run.
Yeah.
Annabeth's cap is definitely doing its job. He notices, like, some locals, some Mount Olympus locals, that seem to be passing by without acknowledging him, which either means he's invisible or it's making him look like a nobody that they do not care about. Percy does give us a few of the sights from Mount Olympus as he runs by. There's Sagittarius Coffee, which I thought was a funny, cute little name. It had to be Starbucks Sagittarius.
Like, right.
It's in there. It's in there somewhere. He also saw a Hephaestus-made steampunk rhinoceros thing that's cleaning the streets. At first, I thought it was just, like, you know, steampunk rhinoceros. It's a Hephaestus, you know, animal, whatever. I didn't think of it as a street cleaner, but I think that's actually, like, its purpose. As opposed to just being like, oh, it's one of them. It's just in the street. You know what I mean? Like, it's wandering around Olympus and it's in the street. Like, I think it actually, maybe its job is to, like, keep the cobblestones clean.
Is this the thing we saw on the show?
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, because I think, from what I remember, that's what it looked like.
Definitely.
Yeah, and we couldn't, like, name it, I don't think. That no. was, like, one of the ones we couldn't specifically identify.
Well, because, like, it definitely wasn't a Colchis bull, because it right. was more of, like, a hippo rhino kind yeah. of... Yeah, it was definitely a rhinoceros, not yeah. So, yeah, like, maybe that's exactly what this is.
Which is really funny that...
And we saw it in the street.
It makes sense that it's in the show and it's in this book because they were kind of happening concurrently.
Absolutely.
So.
Yeah, that's kind of funny. He also walked by a park, which had a gazebo and, of course, open mic night posters, which was really funny. And then pigeons, because pigeons are literally everywhere.
Yeah, I love that he had to mention the pigeons.
Of course. He mentions that he got the directions to Zeus's palace from Grover, and of course, satyrs give directions in botanical terms. So instead of turn right at the stop sign or check out that one building and then you want to go, no. He literally gives them, like, poplar tree directions. Like, there's two twin poplar trees. When you see them, you want to make a right. Like, I thought that was really cute.
Yeah, and I mean, it makes sense because that's what they're paying attention to.
Right.
Those are their landmarks.
And I love that this is, like, a thing. Like, it wasn't like Percy was saying, these are weird directions, like, I gotta get used to this. No, this is a thing he's practiced yeah. with and worked on, because this is not the first time Grover's yeah. directed him somewhere. And I just really thought it was cute that, like, he has this special botanical way of getting around because of Grover.
Yeah. And I wish I had a satyr friend. I've been wanting to learn trees and stuff for the longest time, because you can, it's easier to find mushrooms when you know, like, which ones grow during which seasons under or on which trees. And I know, like, the very basic, you know, handful of trees, but there are a bunch more that I wish I could more easily identify. And if Grover was my best friend, he would help me find mushrooms all the time.
Heck yeah, he would. He'd be super excited about that. I also thought it was funny, Percy mentions that the chalice is kind of pulling him in a direction, and while he's not entirely following that, he's using that as a guide, like, okay, Grover wants me to turn here, the cup wants me to turn here, I can go this way. Because he does mention that, like, it could be dragging him to a local high school to serve beverages, and I'm like, yeah, I would be remiss to, like, full-on trust the chalice to get you in the right place, but... Grover plus the chalice equals, this has got to be correct. So Percy finds the entrance to the kitchens, the hidden entrance that he's looking for. It's in an alley, but alleys in Olympus are incredibly clean and really, like, ritzy and pretty. So I just thought that's, you know, it's one of those things where you don't really think about it, but even in Olympus, the alleys are gorgeous. He performs the shave and a haircut knock, which I just love that that's a special detail. Yeah. I don't know if this was, like, a secret knock. Like Grover said, you have to do this in order to get in, or if this was just like Percy's like, I got a knock.
Do, 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 do. Yeah. I
do, do. Okay.
I feel like I'm trying to remember what they said, because I think he just said special knock and Percy interpreted that as that one.
Right.
Which I think, I don't know, makes sense, I guess, but like
it's goofballs. Yeah, whatever it is.
I don't know.
When Naomi opens the door, we find out that cloud nymphs look very much like cloud nymphs. There's no mistaking them for mm-hmm. something else, which I thought was fun, especially because with all the other, like, nymphs and dryads that we've met, sometimes it's kind of hard to tell exactly what kind they are right. because forest versus, like, jungle, or, you know, like, there's so many different varieties, and when they're all very nature-based, sometimes it's not super easy. But cloud nymphs are completely unmistakable.
Yeah.
They, you know, they barely have little feet. They're, like, you know, very wispy little feet, because they're just floating all over the place trying to get all their stuff done, and I thought that was a cute little description, too. Naomi finds it hilarious when Percy introduces himself as Marin's friend.
Yeah.
Because Marin doesn't have friends. Yeah. And she's just kind of like, no. And Percy's like, well, actually, I'm Grover Underwood's friend. And then she just kind of yanks him in and says,
yeah. All right. I think it's so funny that she was like, instead of being like, Marin doesn't have friends, you're trying to trick me, I'm turning you away, she's like, okay, Grover, like, I guess I trust him too. So.
Right, like, okay. Yeah. Yeah, I guess Grover might be Marin's friend, yeah. And if you want to call him that. Percy then, as he's, like, entering the kitchen and getting a look around, it kind of dawns on him, like, why do the gods even have kitchens? They can basically poof stuff to them with the snap of their fingers. So, like, why do they want kitchens? And he answers his own question and says, like, of course the gods want to be waited on and served. They want servants to cater to their every whim, even if they're completely capable of giving themselves their every whim.
Yeah, this was hilarious to me because I was thinking the same thing. I was like, it is kind of weird that they have kitchens because they're gods. They can do anything they want. But, like, of course it makes sense that they just want people waiting on them.
Right? They want to feel important. Sitting at home by themselves, just poofing in whatever they desire, is not enough drama for them. They want people to be witness to their power and greatness and
yeah.
bringing them all of their, you know, most ardent desires, whatever. I thought it was just kind of funny that Percy has the question and then kind of answers it himself all in one little moment. Like, I know exactly why they have a kitchen. Percy sees the bevy of dishes that are being made, both breakfast and lunch fare, and hates on brunch one last time.
Yeah.
So, gotta love that. And then Naomi sees the chalice, and she kind of figures out why Percy's there. So I thought it was an interesting exchange. She figures out the like chalice thing. So she's like, "Oh, are you a god then?" And Percy has this moment where he thinks of the Ghostbusters line, "If someone asks you if you're a god, you say yes." It's a Ghostbusters quote.
Yeah. No. Now that you said that, like,
Ray, if someone asks you if you're a god, you say yes.
Yeah. Okay.
And I was like, "Oh my god!" Like. Rick through Ghostbusters, like, it feels like it was just for me.
Yeah.
Because I freaking love Ghostbusters.
I felt like that was a callback to something, and I was like, I don't know, and I just kept going, and now I'm a little mad at myself that I missed that, but that's really great.
It is from the original Ghostbusters, not from the sequel or any of the remakes or anything like that. It is the original movie, so if you haven't seen it in a while, that may have been why you didn't get it, if you didn't get it. But yeah, that made me really, really happy. And it also, I just kind of loved that Naomi, like, assumed if you have the chalice, you're probably a god because you would have drank from it. If you're mortal and you have the chalice, why aren't you drinking from it?
Right.
And I just kind of love that Percy, like, had a minute to be like, no.
Yeah, I mean, and that's really important, too. Like, he's just like, no, I'm still mortal. I'm not a god. I didn't drink from it.
Just a delivery boy at this point. And Naomi also mentions that Ganymede has been sweating Greek fire, and at first it sounds a little bit like hyperbole, but it's not. He's literally sweating Greek fire, which is good times, good times. Percy asks Naomi if she can help him to get Ganymede's attention, get Ganymede into the kitchen so he can hand it off, and she basically says, nope, you are completely on your own. I got you in the kitchen. That's all I'm doing. He even asks for a waiter's uniform or a fake mustache, and she just kind of scoffs at him and walks away. So Percy is on his own, but at least he got this far. So now he has to see what's going on in the dining room outside the kitchen. So he kind of peeks his head out, and he gives us a very detailed description of this room.
This whole chapter was full of a lot of descriptions of Mount Olympus and, like, really setting the atmosphere and, like, really, because we've been to Mount Olympus before, but I don't remember Rick ever going into this much specific detail about what it looked like, which I thought was really cool and also might be reflective of him working on the show because it was literally right there in front of him.
It's so much more visual.
Yeah.
Like, when you're a writer and you're writing, you're giving people the bare bones information so that things logically make sense in their head so that you can kind of form a visual of what it looks like for Percy to walk from a floating elevator to down this path to the throne room. Like, that's pretty much of Olympus as we've really seen.
Yeah.
But now that he's kind of having to explore it a little bit here, I feel like Rick kind of has this need to give us more of a visual so that we can see it kind of like we're watching the show. Like, I'm sure tapping into putting visuals to this stuff has affected the way he kind of sees things and the way he describes things. So yeah, we have a lot of description in this chapter. But yeah, Percy pokes his head out of the kitchen to kind of get lay of the land and see what he's working with here. And we learn that this dining room is ancient Roman feast hall meets Beverly Hills party pad.
Makes sense.
Do you know what a conversation pit is?
I think so. Okay. Isn't that when it's, like, sunken down?
Yeah. It's, like, an old 60s, 70s, like, it was huge back then, where it's a sunken living room, you step down into it, and usually the couch is, like, built into the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's basically what we have going on here. There's this sunken conversation pit in the middle of the room filled with purple embroidered couches and, like, it's basically purple and gold. So you've got this big gold table with gold cutlery and platters, like gold platters full of fruit, and then you've got these embroidered, like, designer delicate couches surrounding the table. He's also very specific to mention the alabaster columns that are etched with gold lightning bolts, and I love how he's like, I'm surprised he didn't monogram everything because he's Zeus, and then he kind of reasons it out again himself. He's like, but they are thunderbolts and they're basically Z's, so yeah. I guess that works.
Yeah.
But yeah, you kind of assume Zeus would, like, need his name on stuff.
Yeah.
He's like that. And then he goes on to talk about how Zeus has every arcade game that's ever been themed to Zeus surrounding, like, the walls. Like, there's these giant windows he talks about, and, like, you can see these gorgeous, like, sights. But then you've got all these arcade games kind of blocking the way. And he goes, it's so like Zeus to have, like, this grand, beautiful room and then be like, look at all the things that are themed to me and my power, and yeah. I'm great. Yeah. So, this whole thing is just very, very Zeus, which I guess it works because it's his house.
Yeah.
Okay, so the party guests that have been included in this lovely brunch are, of course, Zeus and Hera. We know that it was for his mother, so Rhea is there as well. We also have Athena, Hermes, Demeter, and then a few unknowns that could be people we've met, but they might also not be. They love to mess with their appearance, so it could be anybody. Percy, as he's getting the lay of the land, he's definitely got his eye out for Ganymede, and he finally gets a glimpse of him, and you can see the absolute terror on Ganymede's face. You can see the bubbles of Greek fire that are bursting on his neck as the sweat, like, just, yeah. So he is literally sweating Greek fire. And we quickly learn that the only reason Ganymede hasn't been found out yet is that no one is allowed to eat or drink anything until Zeus has finished speaking about how awesome his mother Rhea is. And he tells tales of her, you know, conquests and all of that stuff. And until he's done, they're not allowed to eat anything, which is the only reason Ganymede is not, like, you know, in a corner, banished somewhere, whatever Zeus would find to do. So Ganymede sees Percy, who's peeking out through the door, and you can see instantly, like, relief and then more worry as he tries to figure out how the heck they're gonna meet up so he can hand off this chalice. Ganymede starts to just make his way to the kitchen, because obviously that's the easiest, and of course Zeus stops him, literally grabs his wrist and, like, stops him from going and says he wants him to hear the story he's telling.
Oh my god. Which he's probably heard 1,000 times before.
And of course Zeus just wants to make everything difficult.
Yeah.
Like why? Why does Ganymede need to hear this? Like, no, not at all. So because Zeus starts to tell them a story, he starts telling the story about Rhea, of course, and it starts with everyone but him rolling around in Cronus' stomach, and Percy kind of has a reaction to this, and it just cracked me up the way he talks, like, the way Percy's like, I really don't want to listen to this. But I know I'm gonna have to. And I honestly thought it was almost hilarious, like, because there were two. He gives us these two things. He goes, I now know two things to be true. And immediately all I can think of was two truths and a lie. So I put this together. It's two truths and a lie. Percy is going to have to listen to this story. Percy is going to have to bring the cup to Ganymede. And Percy can just stride his happy ass into that room with no problems at all. Two of those things are true. One of them is false.
I'm going to say the last one's false.
Pretty much. Yeah. So he's going to have... This is the end of the chapter. And he knows now... There's no two buts about it. Like, he's going to have to take the cup into that room somehow. And, of course, that's going to mean listening to Zeus's gross stories.
Yeah. And how many of the stories about Rhea were actually about Zeus?
I mean...
All of them?
I was going to say 99.7% of them is definitely going to be about Zeus. Yeah, for sure. So that brings us to our favorite lines and our favorite moments. Hey, Karen, what is your favorite line?
Mine was when Percy was talking about, you know, why do the gods need kitchens and all that kind of stuff. And he says, gods ate the spotlight more than they ate nectar and ambrosia. And I just thought, like, how true is that? But just how great of a line is that?
It's a good line. It's a really good line. Mine was the exchange between Naomi and Percy when he gets to the door and she hasn't yet let him in the kitchen. And she says, you brought donuts? And he goes, no. And she says, you smell like moochy donuts. And Percy's like, that's because, never mind. I just love that, like, she smells it, so it's like, you brought donuts.
Yeah.
Very moochy donuts, too. Like, I want them. I just thought it was a really cute little exchange between two of them. Okay, and then we have our favorite moments. What's yours?
Mine was Ganymede literally sweating Greek fire, because that was pretty funny.
It's a good visual.
Yeah, because you think that she's just kind of, like you said, being hyperbolic about it, and then he goes and sees that he is literally sweating Greek fire.
Like, bursting. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so funny. It's so funny. Mine was Percy navigating botanically.
Yes. I love how you phrased that.
Exactly. I was so proud of myself when I put this down, because I was like, it's exactly the way to say it, too, because, again, it's not a skill that most people have, unless you're particularly nature-driven. Like, unless you have a job that's nature-driven, or you just love being in nature and love learning about nature. A lot of us would fail to identify a poplar tree or whatever, you know, whatever landmarks Grover's using. So it just seemed extra funny and cute that Percy really does know how to follow Grover's directions.
Yeah.
Okay, and that takes us to Chalice of the Gods, chapter 31. I face a dangerous predator who is possibly my future mother-in-law. So Percy makes a new dryad friend in the kitchens. He needs to get out to the dining room, and he kind of figures out that the best way is to hide under the tablecloth of the pastry cart on the lower level with the chalice, and then when he gets a chance, just kind of, like, sneak it to Ganymede. And so he makes a friend that he needs to push the cart. Her name is Barbara, and she is a huge fan of Ms. Annabeth Chase. And I think in possibly the easiest exchange of goods Percy's ever had with a creature from this world, she just wants a selfie and an autograph with Annabeth in exchange for helping Percy out here. And if Annabeth whines about it, he'll say, had to deliver the chalice.
Yeah.
Please do this for me. I think she would in an instant anyway, but it's definitely one of the easier tasks he's been asked.
That really kind of makes me wonder, to the, like, nymphs and dryads and stuff, because they're ancient beings themselves and have, you know, been reincarnated a bunch of times and stuff like that. But, like, are the demigods, like, celebrities to them? Because I feel like in some cases I could see that being true. In other cases, I could see them feeling like they're kind of above the demigods and stuff, or, like, being bitter that the demigods get all the glory and that sort of thing. But this was a really interesting exchange to me.
I do agree with you. I think it could go either way. Like, yeah, they've been around for so long, they could feel more superior. But I can also see them just being like, ooh, we got a new one on the scene. Yeah. Like, all right, I wonder if they're going to be worth it. How long are they going to stay alive? Let's take bets. Yeah. You know, it could be that sort of thing, too. Yeah. Okay, so Barbara pushes the cart into the dining room with Percy on the bottom rack part. And we hear Zeus telling a tale about being a diapered babe surrounded by angry llamas in ancient Greece. And a little bicker breaks out between Zeus and, I think it's his mom, who says, like, there's no llamas in ancient Greece. Or maybe it was Hera.
I think it was Hera.
Yeah, and he's like, of course there were. Just because there aren't now doesn't mean they weren't there when I was there. Because Zeus is never wrong.
So, exactly.
Of course, even if he remembers it completely incorrectly, of course it's right. The cart is creaking a little too much with its heavy cargo. I mean, Percy weighs more than a scone. And so the creaking annoys Zeus. So he stops, asks Barbara to stop. And she does immediately and apologizes. And the cart is about 10 feet from Ganymede. So it's still too far to just sneak the chalice out from under and get it to him without being seen. So instead, Percy lifts the curtain just a little to see what he's looking with, what he's working with here, where he's at. And he's face to face with a lion. which happens to be at Rhea's feet.
Yeah.
He's kind of under the table, but not really, but it's, like, enough that, yeah, he's, like, right there with this lion. And, of course, he's afraid of being eaten, so he kind of says, like, my bad, and, like, pulls the curtain back down and hopes beyond hope that the lion will not attack him. It's at that point that Zeus says something, and Rhea starts, like, stroking the lion, like petting him or whatever. So thank goodness that distracts the lion and it does not attack Percy. But he does peek again to kind of see what kind of danger is still lurking. And when he does this, Athena happens to be popping her head under the table and staring him directly in the eye.
Really, this is like best case scenario for Percy, because anyone else I think would not have been as good as Athena was to him. The only other one that I could see maybe not making a fuss would be, like, Demeter, because I don't know how much she cares. Hermes, he could go either way, because he is a trickster god. But I think Athena really was best-case scenario for Percy.
I think so, too. Yeah, I agree with you. I think Hermes might have thought it was hilarious to get Percy seen.
Yeah.
And have to explain to Zeus why he's there, why he's holding the chalice.
Like, make Barbara, like, bring the cart all the way around the other side of the table or something.
Like, why don't you bring those scones over here, Barbara? Like, I could totally see that. Yeah. Whereas Athena's just like, I want you to go away.
Yeah.
So let's find the easiest way to get you out of this situation. I did love this silent interrogation that goes on between them, so I want to read that really quick. It wasn't your line, was it?
No.
Okay, thank goodness. Because it's so funny, but also, like, absolutely perfect. It's exactly what you expect to happen.
Like, in my head, this is actually what they were saying, talking to
each
other.
Absolutely. Percy says, the conversation went something like this. Athena, why? Percy, quest. Sorry, trying to hide. Athena, under a pastry cart? That's so cliched. Percy, yeah, I know. Athena, I can't believe my daughter is still dating you. Percy, love is a mystery. Please don't kill me. Athena, dots, Percy, dots. Like, it's exactly what you expect from these two. I love that there's always a reference to, why is my daughter dating you?
Yeah.
Like, why is she near you? She can do better. No, she can't. So we have this little interaction between Athena and Percy, and he's not really sure what she's gonna do to help. I don't think he assumes she's going to help. He just kind of pulls the curtain back down again and is trying to figure out what to do next. And Athena saves the day. She asks Ganymede, can you take the cart back to the kitchen? I don't see the clotted cream on there to go with the scones, and that's unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
So Ganymede jumps at the chance to grab the cart and get it back to the kitchen, and he comes back later with all of the necessary things. So it's a genius ploy to get everybody back where they need to be, and thank God for Athena.
Yeah. I mean, she did it without hesitation, really, after their silent conversation, and I mean, it really was just the easiest, best thing to do in that situation.
Like, I'm curious if she's just like, if I don't help him, Annabeth's gonna get mad.
Yeah.
I don't want to deal with that, so.
I mean, I don't think she did this out of love of Percy Jackson.
Definitely not. It's definitely more for Annabeth than Percy, for sure. We also learn, as if we didn't already know it, that Zeus is a complete lech, because as Ganymede walks away, he makes a comment about watching Ganymede walk away.
Yeah.
And Hera is like, can you not?
I'm sitting right here. And it's just like, God, he's so gross. And it's funny, like, I wouldn't necessarily think of having that comment in, like, a middle grade book.
Same. I kind of thought the same thing.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, that is exactly who Zeus is, and I think it's really important. Like, and Rick has always made it a point that Zeus especially is, like, the worst of the worst, because he really is in all of the myths and everything, to not let him get away. And also, like, to remind us that the gods oftentimes they're not straight. Like,
no.
There were a lot of instances of gods, you know, being queer and stuff like that. And I do really love that Rick put that in there.
Zeus is an equal opportunity lech.
Yeah.
Like, he's not good in any way, but that doesn't, you know, like, yeah, he definitely had you know, old, young, male, female, you know, all kinds of different lovers throughout all of his time, you know. So, yeah, it is kind of, it seemed off to put it in, like, a middle grade book, but you're right. At the same time, Rick has never shied away from making clear exactly who Zeus is, and I think that's exactly what this was meant to do. So, once they safely make it to the kitchens, Ganymede is presented with the chalice by Percy. He realizes quickly that, like, Ganymede hasn't taken it from him. He's like, oh, I gotta present it. Yeah. Because that's what we do.
He has to, like, actively give up his chance at immortality by giving it back to Ganymede.
Yeah, so he does that. He presents it to Ganymede and, of course, asks for his recommendation letter. And the recommendation letter is more like a recommendation blank piece of paper that Percy has to dictate his own recommendation onto. And as long as he's not too extravagant with his praise of himself, Ganymede's signature will magically appear at the bottom, and it's completely legal and totally fine, and this is ethical, and yeah.
Well, first of all, I wonder how, like, wild Percy could get in praising himself, because this is the god's standards. This is Ganymede's standards.
Exactly.
He could probably say some wild things and get away with it. But this made me so angry, and I was not expecting to get so mad at this part, because it's like, Percy just went through all of this stuff for you. The least you could do is write 3 sentences about how great he is and sign it. But no, even Percy has to do that part.
Yep. Yeah. My jaw dropped, honest to God, because I just expected Ganymede to be like, oh yeah, here it is, and it says, like, Percy Jackson is great.
Yeah, like
I expected it to be funny.
Yeah.
I expected to have that moment, because it's a total Rick Riordan moment. But, like, it was even worse than I thought.
Yeah.
And that is just hilarious. Yeah, so at least he has this piece of paper now, and he has not yet dictated his letter, but I'm sure, hopefully, we'll get to see what that letter says in the near future. So Ganymede leaves, especially because Zeus is in the dining room yelling, Ganymede, like, get out here, I want to finish the story. So Ganymede takes the chalice and goes back to his duties, and all is well. Barbara is grateful to have a chance to meet her hero, Annabeth, and we have another last little interaction between Naomi and Percy, where Percy kind of has a look on his face, and Naomi interprets that as him feeling, like, neglected, and, like, not appreciated, and it's a nice little moment to illustrate that neither one of them feels particularly valued by the gods that they're kind of called to serve or to do things for. As demigods, it's their job to solve the gods' problems when they ask for help. And, you know, the nymphs, I'm sure, serving Zeus on a daily basis from the kitchens, like, it's not glorious. He does not thank them for anything ever. So I just thought it was cute that they had a little moment, like, Percy wasn't necessarily feeling neglected because he's so used to feeling like this now, but Naomi read it on his face, and it's an interesting little thing.
Mm-hmm.
Last but never least, Naomi offers him a demi bag for the road, and it took me a second, but I think it's supposed to be doggy bag.
Yeah.
But it's like the demigod version.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my gosh.
Because they're just the gods' little lap dogs, right? Really, you know?
So, like, let me make you a doggy bag, a demi bag for the road. Like, it made me so, like, I was like, oh my god. He didn't do that. Rick did not put that in there. But he did. He absolutely did. Yeah. And it's funny.
So, were you disappointed that there wasn't more of a scene in the banquet?
I definitely expected a confrontation between Percy and Zeus.
Yeah.
Which would not have been good.
Yeah, I don't think that Rick could have written that.
I don't think
it would have worked out well for Percy. So this really was, like, I feel like the only option. Either that or, like, everybody notices, but, like, maybe Hera and Zeus or something like that. But yeah, I mean, if Hera had saw him, it would have been really bad. Hermes probably would have caused trouble. Rhea, you know, she seems okay, but she's also Zeus's mother, so, like, is even bigger of a god and all that kind of stuff.
Well, and Percy interrupting this brunch would have had consequences that we would have had to have seen in the next series.
Yeah.
Like, or at least later in this one, you know what I mean? Like, having Zeus and Hera feel disrespected by Percy for interrupting this to deliver this would have caused a whole snowball of stuff. So, yeah, they couldn't really see him.
And if they had found out that the chalice had been missing the whole time, Ganymede could maybe still get in trouble. So, yeah, I mean, he really couldn't do more with it, but I was like, it wasn't quite anticlimactic, but I did expect a lot more from it, but I understand why.
Absolutely. He didn't. Yeah, it did feel strange that we didn't get a Percy-Zeus interaction, because I think that's what we've come to expect from Rick. Yeah. When you've got a god and something that could go wrong, it goes wrong. This time, it might have gone a little wrong, but it didn't, the whole thing didn't go wrong. And so it's just new and different that not everything goes as worse and terrible as it possibly could.
Sometimes Percy is a little lucky.
Just a teensy little bit. Yeah. Okay, and that brings us to our favorite lines and our favorite moments. Karen, what was your favorite line?
Mine was this whole sequence with the lion, because I thought it was so funny. He goes, "I try to use my son of the sea god patent-pending telepathy to send him a message. I am harmless. Please do not eat me." But I was pretty sure that, one, the lion was not a sea creature, and two, even if I could communicate with him, he would not listen to me. I mouthed, "Okay, bye." I slowly lowered the edge of the tablecloth. It would not protect me from the lion, but maybe he would forget about me?
It's so
great. It's so visual. Like, I can just imagine it. And also, the okay bye always reminds me of Frozen. I can't, like, not hear it like that. And it was just, so funny.
Yeah. No, it's good. It's a good one. It's such a, yeah, such a moment. Mine was between Barbara and Percy. It was after he had agreed to give her Annabeth's autograph and get her a selfie. Barbara says, "Deal. But if you're discovered, I have no idea who you are or how you got under the cart, and I will scream, 'Demigod, kill him!' Cool?" And Percy says, "I would expect nothing less."
Yeah, he's really not fazed by it.
Nope, not at all at this point, but it was just funny to have her actually, like, say, "Hey, by the way, I will yell, 'Demigod, kill him.'"
I will throw you under the pastry cart.
Absolutely. Definitely. And what was your favorite moment?
Mine's, like, different from yours, but, like, it's the same thing, pretty much. It's just Athena helping Percy out of the goodness of her heart, or at least for the love of her daughter.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Mine was specifically Athena catching Percy on the cart, because there's just something about him lifting the thing, meeting her eyes, and being like, how is she going to play this?
Please, like, don't kill me.
Is this goddess about to kill me? But she does have a daughter who's fond of me, so maybe she'll spare me this time. And yeah, like, that whole thing, just that whole interaction between the two of them is absolute, mwah, it's beautiful. I love it. Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Instagram at Prophecy Radio Podcast, or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us and our episodes on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and we really appreciate them. You can leave us questions, comments, or ideas for episodes or content you want to hear from us. We do have some feedback this week, so I will throw it back to Karen to hear what Solomon had to say.
Yeah, he said, "Just finished listening to the coverage of chapters 1-3 of Chalice of the Gods. I've only read that far, so I have no idea if this has already been resolved, but re Annabeth's maybe a problem she's hiding. How cool would it be if Annabeth was the quest giver for the third quest/book? The only problem with this is we now know that, like, the gods have to give the quests, but I also thought, how cool would it be if Grover did? Because Grover's not technically a god, but, like, isn't he, like, he's not the god of the wild, but, like, he's a little bit more elevated than, like, your typical satyr because of, like, Pan's interaction with him and stuff.
He's got his searcher's license.
And he's, like, on the council, and especially with Pan kind of giving Grover that mantle in a way to, like, take over and make sure that, like, the wild survives somehow. I feel like that would be really cool if Grover was the one to send him on. And then at the end, like, it was like, did you really complete it to the best of your ability? And gives him, you know, trouble. Makes it a little hard for him, but eventually turns over the
thing. Yeah, no, that would have been a fun, like, twist for this. Especially if the first one's Ganymede, the second one is, you know, somebody else. And then the third one, like, we expect it to be a god, and to find out that, like, it's Grover. Yeah. It's Annabeth. Like, that would be kind of fun. Okay, so next time we will be discussing Chalice of the Gods chapters 32 and 33, which Karen looked before. This is our penultimate
yes.
Chalice of the Gods episode.
Yes.
We'll be recording this next one, and then there will be 34 and 35, and that's it.
Yeah. We're done with Chalice of the Gods. That's really exciting.
Yeah, it wrapped up pretty quick here. I will feel like it feels like we've just been flying through the second half of this book. Okay, so until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio, signing off. Over and out.